Looking at the topic of truth and speaking the truth in our daily lives. And as Herbert said, you've got a double act this morning. Me and Neil are sharing the sermon. It's not like The Voice battle rounds. I don't know if anyone saw that program last night. You haven't got to eliminate one of us at the end of the service. Hopefully we'll be working in tandem and together. We've prepared this message together, but we'll be looking at the whole example of Nehemiah and trying to be inspired by Nehemiah to kind of address situations that need to be addressed in our society and in our personal lives. And we'll be looking at the questions that are in the bulletin. So if you want to just take your bulletin and just have a glance at the questions there. There's three questions. What are the walls you are being called to rebuild? What are the immediate challenges around truth and injustice that you are facing personally at the moment? And how can we, as people, develop our skills as those who have been called to speak the truth in love? Okay, so they're the questions for us to be considering today. And we want to use the Serenity Prayer, which is also written there, if we can have that up on the screen. We'll use it at the beginning and the end of our talk, because I think it's really relevant as we start to think about what are the challenges that we might be being called to address. Let's pray for that wisdom, that God would help us to know what to get involved in, what to challenge, and what to leave to him. So I'm just going to open with that prayer and then hand over to Neil. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Amen. So, as Herbert was saying earlier, we're continuing our sermon series around living life on the front line. How do we interact with the world around us? And we've looked at a whole number of topics. We've looked at a dog-eat-dog world. We've looked at time management. We looked about changing things in the small things. And we had Ben Ray here last week in the morning talking about the work of Nima Crafts and the way that they're making a difference over there. And today we're looking at how can I tell the truth and speak the truth and still be successful. I'm going to give a bit of a context to Nehemiah chapter 1 and then some personal reflections. So Nehemiah, who is Nehemiah? Who is this guy? And it's interesting, it's the last verse of chapter 1, which basically says he's the cupbearer. Now that he's not a waiter. It's one of the most trusted positions in the kingdom to be a cupbearer. He's equivalent of a member of the government's cabinet. Maybe think William Hague, had a unique ability to influence the king. He could actually poison the king because he was the cupbearer, and he was trusted. And what's interesting is he was an exile. He was not one of the tribe of the king. He was actually a Jew in exile and had a lot of reasons why he might actually want to poison the king. But actually, he was in a position of influence, and he was there. At the start of chapter 1, we hear about what Nehemiah did. He listened to the people's problem. He actually listened to what was going on, and he heard about the gates and the walls that had been broken down. For 150 years, the people had been in exile, and the area and the walls had come down. Why do walls matter? Probably don't matter that much to us in today's world. If we think about city walls, they're just sort of ornate things that you might walk around if you go and visit a city. Look at these old-fashioned walls. But for them, ancient walls are really important. It was about protection. It was about saying that the people still had an identity and there was strength, and they were able to have protect themselves without outside interference. I want to talk through a few things about Nehemiah's response. If you click once more, hopefully the points will start to come up. The first of which is the first response for Nehemiah is he went to God first. He wasn't afraid to approach God. How many times when we're maybe challenged with situations do we actually say our first response is to go to God? Maybe our first response is just to go, how do we deal with this situation in Ukraine or in Syria? What do we do about the things that we face? But his first response was to go to God. And he had a real deep reliance on prayer. I'm going to encourage you to read the prayer and look at the pattern of the prayer during the week. So do read, take that reading and go in it. And in it, he talks about how he reminds God of his character. He knew about the history of what God has done in life, and he reminded us about his character, God's character and his promises. He was personally aware of his sin and the sin of his people. But it wasn't just a prayer that just stayed there. He actively said, I want to act. How many of us go, there's this really big situation in Ukraine, for example, and then we're going to actually act on it? Most of us think, oh God, there's this massive situation, what do I do? But normally we don't actually ask the what do I do, we just kind of go, here it is, God, and then get on with our normal lives. But one of the challenges is he actually took and resolved to act in that area. But he was also a man who was aware of his own weakness. In chapter 6, he talks about God's strength in my hands. He wasn't unaware that he was a weak person. And that's something that's really important. He wasn't someone who was a superhero. He recognized his own human frailty. The second point that I want to take is that he had an absolute profound passion for the people. He was deeply moved when he heard the situation. He wept for a number of days. There's a real danger in our world, particularly when we're bombarded with so much information, about apathy. Being a nation that watches and being unmoved by the circumstances around us. And I want to ask you this question this morning. What is it that moves you? And ask myself the question, what is it that moves me? Is it about the state of our nation, our local area, the church? For me personally, the NHS, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But what is the situations that challenge you? You can't be moved by everything, otherwise you'll be unable to do anything. But what are the specific things that actually really move you? The third thing for Nehemiah is he got personally involved and he was prepared to make a sacrifice. We know that Jesus is the ultimate example of that, of getting involved in this world and sacrificing himself, and we'll be remembering that in communion. But he took a sacrifice, and it's equivalent of William Hague not just talking about the situation but going over to Syria and actually starting to work out there in terms of, say, rebuilding some walls. It was a very significant thing to do. Not only that, the next lesson is he also had a vision of what could be. He recognised that whilst these walls had been down for 150 years, that he could do something about it, and he understood the importance of what would happen if they could happen. He was willing to take an initiative, and he did that with the king, and he asked for the king's blessing. He got these letters and he got some wood and he went off and did this work. And then he, with others, went and met that need, going and working in the area. And incredibly, even though the walls had been destructed for 150 years, in 52 days, those walls were built up. Some really interesting examples of how he did that delegation, how he did that engagement process. Got people to talk about rebuilding the wall just in front of their house, the things that would motivate them. And he did that. So the question for us today at the beginning is, what are the walls? What are the big picture issues that we're called to rebuild? There are three key things behind that that I'd like you to kind of reflect on. Expressing direct prayer for God's guidance and direction. I think we're so bombarded, particularly in today's modern world, with so many issues. How do we understand what is it that God maybe is calling us to act on? The second is about facing that situation honestly and planning and prayer, and then recognising we can't actually do it on our own and asking for God's strength in that. If you go on to the next slide, my current role is working in the NHS. And there's a few of the challenges that are on there. A&E pressures that we all know about. We know the NHS is under a spotlight. We've got the mid-staffs inquiry and decisions that were made in this last week to disband that trust because of the situations that have happened over there. There are new systems have been put in, the 111 system, which has had a lot of kind of negative publicity around it to try and take pressures away from accident emergency departments and direct people to the right place. We've got an efficiency and a growth challenge. I've underlined the word efficiency because actually growth basically means we would maybe get more money coming into the NHS through other sources. That's going to be quite challenging in our overall GDP issue as a country. So the real challenge is efficiency. And it's not because the NHS is saying they want to cut resources overall. What they're trying to do is saying, actually, people are getting older, they've got more demands. And so the challenge is, whilst wages have to go up a bit, if the money they give you is exactly the same, it gives you a real gap. And they estimate it's about £60 billion over up for the next sort of 10 years by 2025. Huge challenges. And in the bottom right-hand corner, you've got Big Ben. And it's not the clock that makes the difference, but politicians, they're lovely, aren't they? We have local politicians, national politicians that we have to work with. And in the context of all of that, we've got to work out what we're going to do. How do we address those issues? And I know they're really emotive issues. And I know there's a number of people here who will be hugely concerned about the situation that's happened at Lewisham Hospital, etc. These are big, big, challenging situations. But we can't do nothing. We need to do something about that. And how do we guide people through that process? If you go on to the next slide. We can't stay the same. We've got to change. This is a programme that I'm currently leading on around cancer services and cardiac services across North Central and North East London, trying to change the way services happen. How do you deliver better outcomes for people and yet save money at the same time and carry a clinical community and the public with you in that? It's not easy. And I could tell you many a story, but I'm not going to do that this morning. But I want to leave you back with that question. What are you being called to rebuild? What are the walls? What are the things, the passion areas for you? And I believe that most people should have one or two issues that are a real driving force. And there'll be different seasons in your life, but what are those things that you may be called to standing up for and making a difference in? But not everything is on a large scale. There are some smaller scale issues, more things around your day-to-day life. And we're going to now watch a DVD clip. And Jasmine, my daughter, was videoed, and Nigel. And they're just going to give some small examples about speaking out in truth and injustice in their situations. And then Peter's going to carry on.
Someone in our class said that Megan was really nice. So me and my friend didn't think that's true. So we stuck up for her and said that she's really nice.
And then what happened?
And then she ignored them and they stopped doing that, so worked.
Thank you.
A situation arose at work in which a lady at work, her name's Margaret, was going to retire, and she was going to retire at the end of the year, 31st of December. But she discovered about a week before Christmas that she was going to lose 8 days' pay because there was a clause in the office handbook that said if you left work after a bank holiday, which would have been Christmas and Boxing Day, and did not return to work after the bank holiday, you lost the wages for that period of time. So she was going to lose a huge chunk of pay. And the reason she couldn't return after Boxing Day was that the firm was closed between Christmas and New Year at the boss's choice. So she was upset about it. I was upset about it. I went to see one of the bosses. He said, well, she should have sorted it out because it was in the manual. She should have known. And it's company policy. So I told him his company policy stinks, which didn't go down terribly well. Yeah. And then I wrote a letter to the bosses about it. There were other people involved as well because it was a situation that was known about all over the firm. But the end result of it was that the CEO announced at the staff Christmas dinner when everybody was present that Margaret would be getting her wages. Yeah. And about 3 or 4 weeks after Christmas, the clause mysteriously disappeared from the office manual.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Nigel.
Thank you very much to Nigel and to Jasmine for sharing those personal examples. What stinks in your office? but what stinks in your front line? What are the personal situations that you are being called to do something about? I was having a little think in my life. What are the challenges for me at the moment? One of the things is just being honest and truthful about the time I've got left to do work here at St. John's. What are the priorities that I need to set over the next few weeks before moving on? Another challenge for me at the moment is around health and fitness, something I'm trying to address in my own life and trying to kind of improve some of my personal habits, lifestyle choices, thinking about marriage and family, being a parent. Am I really prioritizing these primary relationships in my life in the way that I should? It's a kind of ongoing struggle and wrestle. I know that one for a lot of us. As a leader in the church, the thing that kind of challenges me, I think, is how should I respond as a leader to the financial crisis in the Church of England and to the mission crisis in our community and in our city? The need for people to hear about Christ. What is God saying to me about how to get involved in that issue? There's a lovely quote from Martin Luther King, which might just inspire you to think about this a bit more. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. And I really liked that quote when I came across it this week. Because if we don't respond to the issues around us of injustice, the challenges to truth that we face on a small scale and a big scale, then we kind of become less human, don't we? And our lives begin to close in and we become not quite the people that God has called us to be. Let's be inspired by Nehemiah. Let's be inspired to get involved, to make a personal response. That's what this book in Nehemiah is all about. This is a man, as Neil was saying, who stepped up to the challenge, was prepared to sacrifice things on a personal level and get involved. And it wasn't all easy for him. Have a look at the chapter 5 section of Nehemiah. If you've got the Bible, it's probably the less familiar part of Nehemiah, but there's this situation going on where the community are settled back in Jerusalem and they've done this work of rebuilding. Nehemiah's mobilized people to get involved, and then there's this division going on between them. There's this growing fear that there won't be enough food for everyone, and people are becoming a bit selfish in the way they're behaving. Some people are really feeling crushed at the rising living costs because of that food shortage. There's a cost of living crisis, if you like, in this chapter of Nehemiah. There's people who have got money, lending money, but at inappropriate rates and ripping off their fellow countrymen. And there are people having to kind of remortgage their property and what they own so they can just afford to pay the bills. Nehemiah doesn't ignore those society issues, but he decides to do something. And there's this conversation and dialogue going on. And I think that's what's good in Nehemiah chapter 5 is things have reached a kind of boiling point and the community are expressing what needs to be challenged. And Nehemiah as a leader is listening and responding and making his own response. It was interesting just to go through Nehemiah chapter 5 like that and see that there are lots of connections with some of the challenges we're facing, you know, around food poverty, around the cost of living, around social inequalities. These are nothing new. They're addressed here in this ancient writing of Nehemiah. What stops us from behaving like Nehemiah and listening and making a response? Often it's that fear, isn't it? It's a fear that we are powerless, that we're just one person. What can we do? Maybe it's a fear that we're going to be overwhelmed if we really open our hearts and minds to the needs around us. God's love will cast out fear. And maybe that's why Nehemiah prayed, because he needed to encounter God's love and God's faithfulness to help him overcome that fear and apathy which may have risen up within his heart. Sometimes it's our need for comfort and our love of comfort. We're a very comfortable people, aren't we? We like our sofas, we like our duvets, we like our nice houses, our holidays, our comfortable lifestyles. You know, Nehemiah had to forego certain comforts in order to respond and to meet the challenge. But it might be more a kind of spiritual opposition. And I think if you read through Nehemiah, you'll see that there's a spiritual battle going on for Jerusalem and for Israel at that time. And even within the community, as they start to move and respond, there's conflict and things that need to be dealt with. And that's why we need prayer. That's why we need our community life to help and support each other engage with the issues that we're challenged with. Just a couple more things to say about this that might help. Think of some of the New Testament references. One of them is Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15 to 16. Paul says to the church, the early church, through the letter of Ephesians, that people should speak the truth in love. And as we do that, we will grow up into Christ, who is the head that is the body. From him, the whole body is joined and held together by every supporting ligament, growing and building itself up in love as each part does its work. If you are familiar with that verse, you might have just heard the first part of it taken out of context, really, that we should speak the truth in love. We should be, as Christians, people who are prepared to confront and challenge injustice in a loving way. And yes, we should. But the wider context is that of building up the body. We should only be kind of challenging and speaking truth to one another in the context of that corporate kind of belonging and community life that we share. And the reason we might want to challenge one another and speak the truth to each other is so that we could build up the body, build up each other. And as well as kind of tackling injustice and speaking truth, we need to at the same time build up and demonstrate love. And if I'm going to tackle my children about their attitude towards their homework, their music practice, or to their relationships, then I also need to make sure they know that there's love, that I love them, that I want to affirm them at the same time, that I want them to know that I'm proud of them. And it's that, as a parent, you both speak truth and you demonstrate love. And we need to do that with each other and in our daily lives and the situations that we face. The final quote to put up is the next slide. If you just put that, it's a guy writing about those words from Ephesians. He said, "We speak the truth in love when we care enough to speak the gospel into the lives of those around us. This is God's everyday calling for every Christian, including on a Sunday. The conversations that we have with one another should be characterized by that willingness to speak truth and to speak good news, to help one another and to build up each other."
I'm sure many of us know that speaking the truth, if we go on to the next slide, speaking the truth is quite interesting. I'm sure we know people, and we probably know ourselves quite well, that sometimes we don't always have tact and diplomacy. And some people don't have what you might call the best emotional intelligence. We use a whole number of words around it, but we all know essentially that some people are quite rude, they don't really listen, they just immediately you start a conversation, they're waiting to interrupt you and say their view. And in that context of talking about truth, and around injustice, we do need to be really, really careful. What I don't want to do after today is, Peter and I don't want to encourage people to go off and be rude to each other, and actually all for the sake of the gospel and actually cause huge amount of damage. So I want to encourage us to think and to use some thoughts about it very carefully. Next week, we've got Bishop Kato coming to us from Tohoku Diocese. And I'm going to teach you two Japanese words. You probably won't use them particularly, and I'll try and read out. The first is too small for you to read, probably. The first is something called tatamai, which is about, there are two words for truth, basically, tatamai and honne. And Minako, who's up on the balcony, will know exactly what this means. And I don't know if there's anyone else Japanese or speaks Japanese in the audience. But Peter's going there on his sabbatical before he goes into his new job. So, Peter, this is especially for you. So it's about what you say to people, and the tatamai is the official truth that you give to people, and honne is the unofficial truth, what you really, really think. And so just a couple of examples, if you can't read the cartoon. I'll look at it carefully, which basically means I'll file it. So what's the honest truth versus the official truth? We're waiting till we can give it our full attention. So when does your visa expire? We're debating it actively. We're laughing at it every night over drinks. I like that one. You should submit such a clever idea to your big boss yourself. Get off my back. So there's a question about what do you really mean when you say things, and sometimes people do have double speak. And I think actually what's interesting in Japan is they're very careful not to put you down in front of other people. But you do need to seek out that informal feedback, because then you understand the honest truth. I think in an English culture, it's different. Actually, we mix sometimes honest truth and what we really think and what we don't really think. And it's actually more confusing. So actually, the Japanese culture, I think, has got a lot to have it for it. But, you know, the classic example is your wife comes home with a new haircut and she says, "What do you think?" And what's the right answer? "You look fantastic." And most of the time, my wife obviously does look absolutely fantastic. And but you wouldn't, there's no point in trying to go to I liked it before, or, you know, it just doesn't, it's not the, you know. So there are times we have to think carefully what we say and when we say it. And our tongues are powerful. They're a really powerful tool. And the book of James describes the tongue as a spark that can light a fire, or a rudder that can steer a whole ship. We need to be careful about it. I remember when I went to Japan, someone gave me some advice. Is you've got two ears, two eyes, and one mouth, and use them in that proportion, which was really helpful in a new culture where you were trying to observe and understand what was going on around you. So we do need to be careful about how we use our tongues. And sometimes less is definitely more. How many times have we regretted saying something that we said kind of on an urge that we thought was really helpful for someone, and then afterwards realise, why on earth did I say that? So it is really important to think about that. And when we look at James, at the end of James, there's a passage that says, "But the wisdom from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." So actually, the qualities and the wisdom that we need in our lives, we need to draw on God. We should be thinking, when we're doing these challenging conversations and speaking about truth or injustice, are we being peace-loving? Are we being considerate? And as Peter said earlier, is there that whole kind of compassion and love in what we're saying? And if we go back to Nehemiah, he took some really important steps before he spoke out. And he prayed. He listened to the people and then prayed and fasted and confessed. And then even while he was confronting the king, he set up a quick arrow prayer saying, "God help me," when he was afraid of the situation. And then in chapter 5, again, he refers and prays again. So when we're in our situations, we need to pray. We need to seek and draw on God to give us that wisdom in how we approach our communication.
Thanks very much, Neil. So let's just close with those questions that are there. And I'll encourage you just to make a response yourself to what God might be challenging you to get involved in. Is there an issue to respond to that he's putting on your heart? Is there something you need to actually do this week? It might be a small thing in your personal life, in your relationships. Let's just pray in response to that. Lord, we ask that you would help us. Help us to be truth speakers in love. Help us to build up the community life of this church and of our wider society by the things that we do and the causes that we champion. And I pray, Lord, for your Spirit to come and empower and equip us as we come to you to receive communion, as we continue with our prayers this morning.
Let's say together the words of the Serenity Prayer as a way of kind of bringing this together. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen.